Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by World's Best Cheese. For more information, visit wbcheese.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live from the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Greg Glaze. On today's show, I have friend of Cutting the Curd, Matt Rubiner of Rubiner's Cheesemongers on the line. How you doing, Matt?
Hey, Greg.
You get that case?
Am I the only one?
Oh, yeah, you're the only one. You're solo today, big guy. Solo. How you doing up there in the Arctic tundra of, what is that, southern Massachusetts? I don't even know where the hell you are. You're up there,
this
huh?
This is deepest, darkest western Massachusetts.
Yeah, it's deep and dark out there. Did you get that case of prune juice I sent you?
Oh, you're very kind, yes, I did.
Got to keep you regular, buddy, you know?
How old are you?
we don't divulge that kind of information, you know?
But you look great.
Absolutely. Made for radio, my friend. Made for radio. Is it your busy season up there, a slow season, or do you have those things up at Rubiner's? Are you just one big, long, you know, blockade of cheese selling? What's going on up there?
No, if only. No, we're wildly seasonal. We go from grand peaks to very deep, deep troughs.
Deep troughs.
This is our historically slow, or at least weather-dependent, fragile period.
Well, you've had a pretty mild winter, though, right? This is the first blast they've given you.
Yeah, but we also have skiing up here, so if there's no snow, the skiers don't come up. You know, we're like the closest skiing to Manhattan, real sort of family skiing. So if those guys don't come up, our hot chocolate sales...
they plummet?
We depend on those hot chocolate sales.
Yeah,
that's the markup is on hot chocolate.
Yeah, pretty goddamn good. That's what I'm saying.
Actually, not ours.
No? What are you serving people out there?
We make our own proprietary blend of fine French chocolates mixed with, some sort of organic sugar and bourbon vanilla, and mix that with some local cream,
And you're rocking
it. Definitely make no money on it at all.
Yeah, but it tastes good. And all the snow bunnies that come and visit you specifically, they just guzzle that down just to get a glimpse of you, I'm sure.
You'd be surprised.
What do you got for good cheese up there, man? You got anything new this winter that you're stoked about?
Let's see. I knew you were going to ask me a bunch of questions. You should have submitted a few questions for my perusal. We just got our first of the year shipment of Ruggles.
Cheeses. Love them.
I know. I adore them so much, and I feel guilty when I speak about them on the airways because they're so wildly unavailable. But if you ever should find them, they're just truly, truly special. I mean, they're sort of in the category of, like, you know, So Young's cheeses from the West Coast.
Yeah.
They're very beautifully made, very simple, undeniably kind of francophile in their nature. They're little Valencier-looking things and little discs and crotons, but just gorgeous, just really perfect cheeses.
So they're all little goaties, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, they're all goat, and they make me, those always make me really happy. What else have you been getting? I don't know. We feel out of touch in January. We run things. We run down the inventory to just the
bare minimums.
To the bare minimums, but the things that we know we're just going to fly off the shelf regardless. So then it's also, you know, the this is the heart of fondue and raclette season as well. So we'll stock up on that, and we've been, you know, very much for a couple of years now, I think. But the raclette du Valais, de Brusson, you know, the thing that that Gormino brings in, the 80
totally.
By far, just absolutely beautiful. And we've actually been toying with, we're blessed with this hearth in our cafe, So it's this mahogany paneled room with this beautiful fireplace, and we've been putting half wheels of raclette stacked up on stones by the fire and scooping it out on potatoes and stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Is that legal? No.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up.
Nice. No. That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, I do that in Italy. I just leave something by the radiator, and then people just scrape it off the floor. It's pretty awesome.
Brooklyn raclette.
But I do get. Have you tried this cheese? Do you buy anything from the Crown Finish for Crown Finish Caves?
You know, I haven't yet, and I feel guilty that I haven't because it just seems so cool. I've tasted things. I've had some of the Paris things that have come out of there. I've tasted a bunch of stuff. I don't have the notes in front of me to remind me what the hell they were, but when I've been in Brooklyn, which I've been in or in New York in general lately, I've scrounged some of those things up.
Yeah,
we'll get them one of these days.
They do this good cheese I just brought in. Yeah, they were a collaboration with the Springbrook Farms. They made this sort of Gruyere type called Tubby, which is really good.
Oh, I saw that. I mean, I saw that Instagrammed all over the place.
It's so good. It's velvety,
really?
Yeah, melty and smooth. You better pick it up there, Rubiner. You better pick it up. It's like
I need an intro to those guys. I'm like a country yokel, as you know, and I don't have the same level of connection you got down there.
I don't even know what to make of that. We'll give you an intro. I promise that. Well, it's good to talk to you, man. I'm always loving to talk to you because you are remote, and I never get to see you. You skulk in and out of New York, and you know you don't call,
do
anything.
I hold my head up high.
Yeah, whatever. So today we're going to talk a little bit about some current events in cheese. And I'm sure you can opine on some things.
Shit up because, as I said, I'm extremely out of touch.
You're good at making shit up, man. I like that about you. So the first and biggest piece of news, which was mentioned on last week's episode about cheese guilds, is that the FDA announced it's pausing non-toxigenic E. coli testing while it reviews rules mandated by the Food Safety Modernization Act. Just a quick recap, the preventative controls for human food rule mandated by FSMA, which became final in September, requires that food producers identify hazards in their products and operations and put controls in place to prevent or minimize these hazards. This, as many of you listening know, is referred to as hazard analysis and critical control points, or HACCP. And looking ahead, the FDA will take another look at what role non-toxigenic E. coli should have in identifying and preventing insanitary conditions and food safety hazards for both domestic and foreign cheese producers. You know, on paper, lots of non-toxigenic E. coli could mean poop or other contamination, but in practice and reality, non-toxigenic E. coli doesn't make people sick, and it's found in higher proportions in raw milk cheese. The FDA will also consider an update, as appropriate, the 2010 compliance policy guide, which outlines safety criteria. That guide reduced by 90% the amount of non-toxigenic E. coli that can be in raw milk cheese. Previously, it was acceptable to have a level of 100 MPN, which is most probable number, per gram in two or more of five samples. And the 2010 guide reduced that to 10 MPN, which made so many things unsaleable. What do you think about this, man? What do you think? I mean, do you think that they'll hold to their ground? It's pretty cool that they pulled that back, I think.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if it was clear from what I hope you were reading from notes, because if you were just dashing that off out of your head, I'm hanging up now. But
I'm a smart guy.
But that does everything you just read represents a not a retreat perhaps, but certainly a softening of a position, or at least a demonstration of a willingness to revisit these issues, which, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, came from a little cajoling through beautifully presented letters signed by the appropriate members of Congress to the FDA. From the key daring states, in one of the few truly, truly bipartisan letters ever signed, when you have Paul Ryan and Bernie Sanders signed
on the same letter.
Same letter.
That's probably the only time in history that ever happened.
One, obviously, breathe a sigh of relief. I think I was opining when I was last on a few weeks ago, which, of course, was billed as drunken, cheese stories or whatever. So, of course, I got drunk and went on a number of rants. I don't remember about what, but
we remember.
But the one thing I do remember is kind of saying, look, you know, if they take this too far, if raw milk cheeses are ever so thoroughly restricted or banned, you know, it takes so much of the fun and kind of the depth away of what, you know, I'm trying to do and what I think all cheesemongers of a certain seriousness are trying to do. And I'd really have to think, you know, I'd have to rethink, you know, the future of my career. But to see them back off like this, it reminds me of what we saw, I don't know if you know now if it was months ago or even a year or two ago, when there was a concern expressed by the FDA, I think in response to some local health authority about the safety of using wood boards to age cheeses, which is, you know, a worldwide practice, you know, proven time and time again to be a safe practice. And at the time, nothing short of a public outcry. I mean, it was in every newspaper, every blog, and not just cheese specific things. You know, Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and everything. My head was just spinning. I couldn't believe that, you know, 10 years ago, there wouldn't have been a sufficient kind of swath of the populace who would even know cheeses are aged on wooden boards, or for that matter, care. But there's been some sea change in people's awareness and people's appreciation for these things that, you know, I don't ever remember a time when a general public, you know, outcry caused a government agency to rethink their position. You know, it's not something that just wouldn't have been on the radar of the population at large. And this is the same kind of thing in that it, you know, gets lots of press. People, you know, surveys at the Cheese of Choice Coalition, or I think they've changed their name to the Old Ways Organization. I think they tweaked the name. I can't remember. But, you know, that Carlos Yescas is heading up now. And, you know, did surveys that, you know, showed that you know, a much higher percentage of people that I thought, you know, thought deeply about these issues and cared about the fact that their cheeses were raw milk and understood what that meant. And even understood some of the controversies, but also, you know, a lot of the, you know, potential, you know, health benefits and certainly benefits in terms of, you know, the flavor and character of the cheese. And to see, a bureaucracy, an entrenched bureaucracy, that has demonstrated over the, you know, certainly since I've been in the business, a willingness to, wherever there was an opportunity, you know,
just gum up the works. Yeah.
And then, you know, here they are, you know, rethinking their position, you know, vowing to look at the science a little more closely and work more closely with the, you know, with the cheesemakers and look at these issues, which is amazing.
I think it speaks a lot to the quality of the cheese, you know. I mean,
And the quality of the cheese and the consciousness of the people who eat the cheese, that this is even, you know, that you can actually have a discussion about something as arcane as, you know, non-toxinogenic E. coli.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this to actually be a reasonably well, you know, known issue.
And but what I mean by the quality is, like, the level artisan cheese making now compared to, like, when we were youngsters, you know, centuries ago, it's just different. I remember the, you know, it would be tough to make a stance, I think, back in the day, you know, that everything was safe and everything was above, you know, above the level. But you have these great organizations, places like Jasper Hill. They just keep moving forward, you know. They raise such a level of awareness, and their cheese is so good, you know. And I think that the people, they just don't want that to go away. It's really simple. If the cheese sucked, people wouldn't care. But when you try to take away something that people like love and don't mind to spend money on, you know, I mean, there's so little. The freedom, like, to eat good things, I think, in this world, it's gone backwards. So I'm happy that people are aware. You know what I mean? Like, it's
no, absolutely. And it kind of underscores what I was saying. I remember several years back. I can't remember the exact circumstances, but there was talk about, you know, I'm just making this up, but, you know, amending or whatever, changing, like, the Codex Alimentarius or whatever, and talking about actual worldwide bans of raw milk.
Yeah, I remember that.
Jesus. And, you know, of course, they back off when somebody lets them know, you know, hey, Parmigiano, Gruyere,
yeah,
you know, cheddar, these things don't exist in a... or at least, you know, Parmigiano, Comté, things like that don't exist in a pasteurized form. And, And but here, you know, you have, because of places like, you know, Jasper Hill and many of, you know, of the, you know, burgeoning so quickly I can't keep track American cheese industry, it's just firmly rooted in the mind of consumers. And I don't mean just you know, the cognoscenti who you know, it's everybody. So it's you know, and of course that's driven by the availability and the, you know, the rising tide of quality, which is so high. You know, I mean, I used to bitch about this 20 years ago, where there were just cheese on the market, which was just patently not ready for the market.
No, and it was three times the price,
how they were
too.
There and how damaging that was. But
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's such a fragile issue. I remember, you know, early on when I was talking to Judy Shad at Capriol, and this must have been, I don't know, 15 years ago or something, and she was saying, look, you know, we want all the inspection you can bring us, you know, just hold us to the letter. Hold
Absolutely.
Us, you know, make these laws very, very clear, work with us, inspect us, keep us, you know, keep us all extremely honest, because all it takes is one. All it takes is one thing to just bring this, you know, business to, you know, this industry to its knees. So, but now it's just so firmly rooted, I think, in the consciousness. And my customers come in, they say, you know, what do you have that's raw milk?
Absolutely.
And it's not just you know, pregnant women trying to avoid everything, we have raw milk. It's people who are seeking these things out for whatever reason.
Yep. Well, good work, cheesemakers. Good work, advocates. Good work, consumers. Let's hope that this holds up. You mentioned briefly Parmigiano Reggiano as being a raw milk cheese of, you know, of vast importance, you know. And this brings me to another interesting current event. You know, I really like this. Whenever I teach cheese classes, I always throw in this little bit of BS, you know, that when I'm talking about Grana and Parmigiano, which I have to include in every, you know, Italy cheese course under penalty of torture and death, you know, because, you know, these are like the mainstays. I always mention that back in the day, Parmigiano or some of these things were traded as currency. And this is happening again. This Forma Donna Casaficio d'Emilia made the news for selling bonds backed by Parmigiano Reggiano cheese, raising 6 million euros. So if you're looking for somewhere to invest some cash, but you understand how traditional stocks and bonds work, maybe this is the right investment for you. This bank in Reggio Emilia, called Credito Emiliano, they're taking, you know, it's really cool. They take the cheese as insurance against your loan, and then they mature the cheese in like the climate controlled vaults for the duration of your loan, which I think is pretty awesome stuff. I mean, come on, man, that's like, I would love that. If I could just get one wheel of Parmigiano, like put appreciated in value, that would be my entire savings account. You know, what do you think about that?
What do I think of that?
Yeah,
this is a practice that's, I mean, I've never quite understood the economics of it, but
I was hoping you're smarter than me. I was hoping you could explain it to me.
No. It turns out I'm not smarter than you at all. but I always have bitched that you know, I'll talk to my friends in the wine business, and they'll talk about these extravagant sales to these collectors. And of course, we can't achieve that because very few people, you know, collect cheese. Because it typically would be a foolish, you know, it's like those things from the Franklin Mint or whatever. They would rarely appreciate its value. In fact, they would just rot.
Yeah. those chocolate-covered coins.
I don't have anything cogent or of even the most minor interest to your listener, your listening audience to add to this.
Well, you are my listening audience. I mean, you know, you are. So, I mean, you know, you're going to replay this. I have two or three people listen to this podcast. So when you replay it, you know, you can no, I'm just kidding.
That's right.
Kidding.
Look, frankly,
we get tons of listeners.
Let's move on to the next subject.
And when you're on, the list, like, the listenership goes up exponentially. I'm going to tell you that much right now. I just thought it was cool. I just think it's neat that that loans are backed by something tangible. I think is really interesting. So this is a good article. You know, it's in Forbes magazine, and check it out. All right, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, and then we're going to come back and shoot the bull a little bit more with Rubiner. Thanks.
Today's program was brought to you by World's Best Cheese. The World's Best Cheeses offers a world-class selection of specialty foods, from fine artisanal domestic products to unique gourmet items from France, UK, Italy, Spain, Germany, Switzerland, Portugal, Denmark, Holland, Norway, and Canada. They offer over 2,500 delicious products, including world-class cheeses, crackers, dips, and spreads. They pride themselves on their commitment to service and their ability to find the products your customers want at great prices. For more information, visit wbcheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm here talking with Matt Rubiner up there at Rubiner's Cheesemongers up there. How are you doing? You still on the line with us? Have you fallen asleep yet?
No, I was asleep when you called.
Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. It's good to just talk a little. You're the best, man. Talk a little goings-on in cheese. I really do. I wanted to mention another cool thing that's happening upcoming. It's a little bit away, but it's a couple months, and it's the next Raw Milk Cheese Appreciation Day, which is really cool. I love this. This is the second annual Raw Milk Cheese Appreciation Day. It's organized by the Cheese Coalition. So it's a starting call for registered events. So we're starting a plan of events at Eataly. We did a nice class and a special menu that we put together, and the customers really liked it. What do you think about this day? Do you think it has an impact? I mean, you mentioned you had a lot of customers come in and ask for raw milk cheese. Do you talk to them about Raw Milk Cheese Day?
I got to admit, we don't have quite our grand plan fleshed out just yet. Last year we had, various sales and tastings and so forth. I think it's important. I always thought that the most important thing about the Cheese of Choice Coalition came out, and this was, years ago, and I think it kind of lay fallow for many years, was because, to me, that is, I think you'll agree, is the issue of raw milk to me so much it boils down to choice. The raw milk, and, I've said this a million times, and so has everybody else, but raw milk cheeses are singled out among almost all foods for a multi-tiers of restriction that one would expect more for, controlled narcotics and the like.
Yeah, or just beef or chicken,
Yeah, like, you can eat sushi.
Yeah.
A warning label on the bottom of the label, or bottom of the menu. You can drink a, fifth of whiskey till you die, and there's a warning on the label. You can, smoke three packs of cigarettes a day. There's a warning on the label. You can eat at Jack in the Box, and there's no warning at all, probably. But
usually you eat there after the fifth of whiskey, so, the whole thing combines to really hurt you in a lot of ways. I've never eaten at Jack in the Box sober, I'll tell you
cheese,
that.
It's with raw milk cheese, and I think I'm probably not saying anything new, but we're not even allowed to even try this stuff. We're not allowed to possess it. We're not allowed to bring it into the country unless, it's been aged for this, semi-arbitrary 60 days period, after which it's thought to be safe, according to most. This is a 56-year-old rule that's been in place, generally unquestioned for decades. We're just not, offered a choice there. So I think the genius of the coalition first came out was stressing this. It's like, look, and then to underscore, you have the notion that raw fluid milk, which, I know it has all sorts of potential health benefits and stuff, but it also has, alleged benefits and stuff, but it also has, in addition to great flavor, it's also no right-thinking person could look you in the face and with a straight face say there are no potential hazards to raw fluid milk. Look, it's a,
of course not.
Potentially very hazardous product. Yet it's legal. Or at least it's up to the municipality. Here in Great Barrington, we're not allowed to sell it in the store, but you can buy it directly from
the farm.
In some states they can wholesale it and buy it at the farm. That is, on the surface of things, far more potentially hazardous than the cheeses. A farmer who milks cows and sells raw milk is perfectly legit. If he makes that same raw milk into the statistically far safer piece of cheese, he's in violation of federal federal rules, not even just some local health department rule, violation of federal rules. So it's this notion of, you know, kind of the unfair treatment of raw milk and the notion that the important aspect of all this is choice. You know, obviously keeping safe, obviously increasing quality, and you know, a good firm inspection regime to make sure everybody's, you know, operating in a safe way with a potentially hazardous thing. But in the end, you know, we should have that choice whether we want to eat it or not. And I think the more outreach you do, the more press, the more you know, in-store things, the more you know programs to get this, you know, notion of choice and the you know, the safety of raw milk cheese out there, you know, I think you can't exaggerate how important this is, because it's clearly, you know, these things have begun to work over the decades. You know, just go back to what we were saying before. People know these issues. There's rarely does somebody come in the store who at least hasn't heard of the issue of raw milk.
See, we get that.
Whatever, they've heard of the issue.
We get people,
you know,
the opposite.
Pretty amazing.
Well, that's,
and so I think any event like this is just a really huge potential, you know, short and long term value.
I mean, for you, I mean, you have a shop. The you get specific customers in your shop. I mean, you don't have the foot traffic, obviously that a store like, say, like Eataly has, 23rd and 5th. We get a lot of people, and we have people in the class. We did a class last year, you know, on the values of raw milk cheese, and they didn't know there was a difference between raw and pasteurized cheese. I mean, there's a goodly amount of people. They have no idea. I think on a base level for consumers, it's just they want things that taste good, you know? A lot of times they want to feel like they're part of something, you know? So, you know, like raw milk cheese makes them feel like a little cooler because they know,
right.
You know, they know, like, they know this word raw, or that, you know, or the unpasteurized milk, and they really have no idea what it really means or why, you know, why pasteurization came about and why cheeses made with pasteurized milk are sometimes more dangerous than the ones made, you know, made with raw milk in terms of their ability to fight off, you know, listeria and other, you know, bad things that happen to them. So I think raw milk, I like raw milk Cheese Appreciation Day, and it gets, you know, We got to, you know, when you're in an operation like ours, like, you have to stack the deck in your favor. So, you know, we put Parmigiano and we put Grana on all of our cheese boards, you know?
Yeah.
And people have no idea. They're like, well, it's just a Grana I get in Italy, you know, and my wife's pregnant and she can't eat this, but she ate it in Italy, and, you know, they don't understand what the reason is for Parmigiano being, you know, made from only raw milk. You know, it's not just an arbitrary law. There's a reason, you know, and I really think it's cool. So I think it's good. You better go back and listen to this discussion, and then make your plans for Raw Milk Cheese Day. You know, Raw Milk Cheese Appreciation Day.
I expect
a class out of you.
As I said,
least.
I was sleeping when you called.
Yeah, I believe you. Another thing that's coming up is there's a new class of ACS certified cheese professionals that took their exam in San Francisco in January. So now there are more than 600 CCPs nationwide.
Huh.
Congrats to everyone who passed.
Are you a CCP?
I am an uncertified cheesemonger. I am uncertified rogue cheesemonger. You know what I mean?
I know, us either. It's like, this is the first time this year. I don't want to disparage the test at all, because I've never even seen the questions. But this is the first year I've thought, you know what? What the hell? I should stop kind of. You know, I should shake off this you know, old notion. Hey, who are these kids?
These youngsters.
Who are these
what are
kids?
They doing?
Who's going to tell me what I know about cheese, what I don't know about cheese? And, you know, I do sometimes, at least in just discussions I've had with people who are more familiar with the test, you know, sometimes, you know, it's these are not the sort of things I train my staff about necessarily. A lot of
sure.
it is, but a lot of it's not. And a lot of it is geared toward business on a, you know, a different level than we'll typically deal with in terms of, you know, just the knowledge of all the, of, you know, some of the more specific, even technical aspects of it that would be, you know, perhaps of more important to a company, you know, like Whole Foods or something.
Sure, you teach them, like,
I mean,
when Matt's wearing sunglasses.
But little less relevant, you know, and it's just not how we train the people. We train them in kind of the old school way to tell the story and to, you know, be, you know, expert in the handling of things and in the knowledge of things and the ability to communicate their passions to the customers and a little less on kind of the technical minutia that, you know, forms, I think, a goodly portion of this this test. So it's not something that's been a priority for me, but now it's just kind of gotten big enough that, you know, what the hell? You think we'll pass?
I won't pass, but 600 CCPs. I mean, when I started to do this, I don't know. I don't know that I could name five or six other people that that did this job on a professional level that I knew when I started back when we were both working in Boston in separate spots. And I think that's amazing. I think it's really amazing as a yardstick for how many people want to do this job, you know? And I think that that's pretty cool, you know what I mean? Just to know that there's that many people out there that take it seriously enough to put down the coin, to take the test and study. I'm not studying for any test. I took this job specifically so I don't have to study for any more tests. You know what I mean? Like, because...
Right, no, you're right. It is incredible the sheer... The sheer numbers of it.
That's cool.
I mean, the sheer number of, I mean, just like I said, even whether it be producers, other shops, and so forth, it's just impossible to keep track because it's just burgeoning so quickly. It's I mean, it's a pretty remarkable thing that, you know, there's 600 people who, frankly, in this business who, you know, give a damn that much to take the test. I mean, we remember a time that there really just weren't, you know, there were a few dozen places around the country that we would, that, you know, learn things from and that we really felt were really top-notch, you know, cutting-edge stores. And that's just not the case. It's fantastic.
No, they were run and manned by straight-wig weirdos like you and me who had been ostracized from proper society. This was the only place we could find. And now there is a society. I don't know. That frightens me. I'm sure I'll get kicked out some way, you know what I mean? Some way, somehow. Well, finally, let's talk a little bit about some cheese references in pop culture recently. So I don't watch New Girl on Fox, but our producer, Emily Acosta, does. And she informed me that in last week's episode, one of the characters ate a giant chunk of La Muscata. You could identify the label if you're familiar with that cheese. And another reference on Amazon's first original show, Transparent, with Jeffrey Tambor, who's pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Angelica Houston guest starred in the recent season, which dropped in December. And her character is a cheesemonger.
Spoiler. I messed up.
We did an episode last year about cheese and film, but it seems like there's like more and more references to cheese in pop culture. They're fun to spot. I think it's pretty cool when an actress plays a cheesemonger, you know what I mean? Like, or do you think it's cool? I think it's pretty fancy.
I think it's
cool.
Unbelievable. I think it's still, it's kind of at the you know, the core point of everything we've talked about today is that there's just a different level of awareness and appreciation. And, you know, and who knew that, a cheesemonger would be some. I mean, the first time they did the Cheesemonger Invitational, like 300 people showed up and had a party and essentially watched a few dozen guys, you know, do their job for 45 minutes. It just seems so absurd to me that people would be into this. And then, you know, you see how that's developed, and you just see that, you know, this is a sought-after, you know, profession for people, and it's cool. And you take one look, you know, I mean, you go to the Cheesemonger Invitational, you line up, you know, these 600, you know, professionals, and, you know, just, you know, they pass the eye test of just kind of, you know, cool, young, modern people. I mean, granted, they, you know, tend to have a geekish intensity about their, you know, approach to cheese, which is thrilling. But the idea, I mean, never before has there been this kind of appreciation. But I also think this Cheesemonger Invitational, you know, and our boy Adam, you know, Adam Moskowitz, who's, you know, this is his brainchild, and I think he's made a contribution through that and just in general, to not just in the development of Larkin, you know, the business he owns and runs, from this kind of, you know, behind the curtain, you know, dark side sort of place, which is, you know, kind of
that's great.
I don't mean that in insulting way. I think it's an awesome way because everybody kind of wanted in, you know. But to one thing that Adam did, I think the one, you know, just crowning achievement that Adam did is he brought the cheesemonger, you know, into the public,
absolutely.
You know, there were cheese makers, there were other people involved in the cheese business, but the celebration of the actual cheesemonger. I mean, and it's pretty, I mean, we'll look up back on this and say, you know, this is when, you know, this
that's a watershed moment.
Part of the industry, you know, flourished.
Absolutely. I mean, what you've mentioned about how you teach people are the skills. It's the same for me. You teach them the skills that are applicable in things like the CMI. That's what it is. You know, those are the things you have to do every day. You have to wrap cheese. You have to cut cheese. You have to develop your persona. You have to convince people to buy these things. You know, you have to be confident in all of the great things that come along with being a cheesemonger, or what that event and what Adam promotes. And I think
it's kind of a new thing. You know, it was always a cheesemaker, or it was always a shop, or an owner of the shop, or particularly, you know, one of the, you know, kind of the leading lights of the business, Steve Jenkins or Max, or people who really, you know, wrote books and who you know, captured the public imagination. But to celebrate the, you know, the cheesemonger, the worker behind the counter.
Absolutely.
Celebrating their skills. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I like it, and I love all the references to it in our culture. I love how it's a legitimate thing. Like, you know, but when I did it, I remember when I said I was going to move to New York and I was going to be a cheesemonger after I graduated from college and my expensive degree that I wasn't going to use at all. And I went to a little graduation party, and my relatives wanted to give back the gifts they did because they were like, "You're going to move to New York and do what?" And they were like, "What are you an asshole or a moron or both?" And I was like, kind of both. But, you know, here I am all this time later. And now it's like, you know, you can say it's just different. It's just different and it's cool. And, you know, and I love that it's out there.
It's amazing.
Been.
I mean, yeah. You know, butchers too. And like, who thought that, you know, there'd be, you know, some sort of, you know, I don't know about full-on Mick Jagger, but, you know, rock star kind of, you know, indie rock star status, garage rock star status for, you know, cheesemongers. Hell, you know, if I weren't a happily married man, you know how much action we cheesemongers would be getting right now?
I know some people who have some, you know, some full-length ceiling posters of you above their bed, but, you know, I'm going to keep their names, you know, out of my mouth for now. Well, Maddie,
the full-length of me is not going to cover this ceiling.
Oh, nice. Well, I'm going to close on that note. And I just want to say,
enjoy your meals, everybody. Enjoy your cheeses.
Thank you so much for coming on and talking about some current events and cheese. Love you, man. Miss you. Come to New York soon. And everybody stay tuned for more Cutting the Curd, coming back at you next week. Ciao.
Very good. Thanks, Rob.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.